I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Higher Education Workforce Development Policy and Finance Division. We don't yet have a quorum, but we're going to go ahead and get started. Representative Norton is first on the agenda with House File 3151. And I believe she will move that bill and recommend that's going to be held over for possible inclusion for the omnibus budget bill. So I'm going to let you go ahead, Representative Norton, and when you have your testifiers, please ask them to tell us their name and for the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's my pleasure to bring forward House File 3151. It is asking for an appropriation, and I'll just give you a little bit of history. Last year during the session, Representative Saitow had a bill for this particular agency to do some job training in the St. Paul area, and as I sat at the table, as you are, and listened to his testimony, I said, this would be wonderful for my community. We have a large immigrant population, and the job skills, I think, would be very, very beneficial. And through the help of some people, we did get an amendment on that bill that put $50,000 toward a pilot project. And so I'm here today to introduce some people that will tell you about what has happened already, given that small $50,000 investment through an agency called IMAA, or Intercultural Mutual Assistance Association, who was the recipient of the grant in my community of Rochester, and let them explain to you what happened, and then I would be happy to answer any questions, but it is for a one-time $75,000 reinvestment to finish out the biennium. And so...
Thank you, and if you just identify yourself for the record, please, to testify.
My name is Carrie Blair, and I'm the Employment Services Program Manager at the IMAA in Rochester. We serve mainly refugees and asylees. The opportunity to partner with LifeTrack Resources out of St. Paul has given us an opportunity to serve local immigrants to increase self-sufficiency indexes and employability measures within the Olmsted County area. Within the last 7 months, our annual goals were to serve 75 people, and year-to-date, we've been able to serve 87 people. So we have exceeded our goals by 160% within the first 7 months of the program. We've been able to get employment for 48 of the people that we've already served. And I believe that you're going to be getting a handout that goes over some of the numbers today. One of the best things, not just only about our results, but the program has offered is something to the Rochester area because of its diversity that we've never been able to offer these types of services and programs before. We've been able to get people have not only cash terminations off MFIB, but increase the housing abilities for the local immigrant community within Rochester. Currently, we have offerings for other programs that serve immigrants and refugees under 5 years, and this pool of money and program has allowed us to increase self-sufficiencies of people that we've never been able to serve in the past 23 years that the IMAA has offered nonprofit services in Olmsted County. I certainly hope that once you look at the ability to offer education to immigrants and refugees in the Rochester community, you will see that we've been able to increase their ability to be income tax paying community members of the area, and strongly hope that you will reconsider or you will consider refunding this project because it's been successful and there's certainly a need in the area.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions? I do have one question. Otherwise, Kathy Beiner, Representative Beiner, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if you'd consider taking the work that you're doing and putting it in a form that could really make it a genuine pilot project so that it could transition to other communities. In other words, can you take exactly how you use the funds and put it into, I'm from Mankato. We could use that kind of funding. We have an immigrant population with very similar needs, probably smaller than yours, but nevertheless would be similarly well served. And there's certainly other areas in outstate Minnesota that I think would be similarly well served. So I guess I would like to see us make better use as a state of what the effort you're doing there. If there would be a way to consider incorporating, formatting the program in a way that you could share it.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Blair?
Absolutely. Diane from Life Tech Resources can certainly speak to that as well. But the format that we're using, and we do this collaboration with the Mankato area and other mutual assistance organizations across the state through the refugee program offices and other forms of funding that serve refugees and asylees who've been in this country less than 5 years.
Hi, my name is Diane Health. I work at Life Tech Resources, and we would love to expand the program into Mankato and other areas. We just don't have the funding right now to be able to do so. So we would love to consider that if that was an option.
Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Recognizing the funding limitations, I'm certainly not asking that we expand the financial commitment, because that's not a likely scenario, but I would think about that we could share the format with other existing organizations and communities so that they might be able to redirect their resources in a more productive manner in terms of creating opportunities for immigrants.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a wonderful idea.
To the second testifier, if you could just repeat your name, please, and I don't think we caught it.
Yes, my name is Diane Health.
How do you spell your last name?
H-E-L-D-T.
Thank you. And Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, is there a mechanism, or what is the mechanism for determining the status of the immigrants that you're dealing with?
The services that we provide, we require documentation prior to the enrollment or the intake of that client into the program, so we would have to verify their legal immigration status.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
And I just wanted to make certain that that the results, I don't know if she said them or not, but 28 of the members, the clients that have been served were MFIP clients. And 12 of them are no longer on MFIP. So I think the benefit of this program, and that was not expected, it was not a target when we set forward. It was something that just happened and we were able to document as we've gone along. So I think in addition to the benefit of putting, training 87 people and putting 48 of them to work already, in and of itself is a great thing. But the additional benefits of taking people off MFIP was an added bonus. I just want to make sure that was clear.
Thank you. We do have a quorum now, so I will ask Representative Norton to she would move her bill as a recommendation to pass and to be held over for possible inclusion and do divisions on the budget bill. And she's going to go ahead and do that. Okay. And I just had a question for Representative Norton and the testifiers. As far as this was a pilot project, so you received some funds to be able to try something new, and you've found that it's been successful. What happens if you don't receive additional dollars, or if the state is going to be facing some tough questions here in the next couple of days? So what if we don't have the revenue to help support the program any longer?
I'm sure. Thank you very much for that question. Initially, I had run into someone that identified themselves as a department employee that was very familiar with IMAA's work in the LIFETRAC program, and said they thought that the department was going to continue to fund it. So I didn't think it was going to be necessary to come forward this year. But then I unfortunately didn't keep the business card of this woman I talked to. I can't see this record down, unfortunately, and have been unable to get confirmation, which is why I brought this forward. The success has just been so phenomenal that I hate to just leave it at chance that the department would pick it up. And so without that confirmation, we step forward and perhaps they could speak to what would happen if.
Yeah, currently we don't have any other funding sources or funding streams that would serve this group of population without these dollars.
All right. And then I just have one more question about other partners as far as funding. Was this solely done from the $50,000 initial investment? And do you have any public or private partners to help support the cost?
Actually, yes. Locally, we've partnered with the Mayo Clinic to increase diversity through education and early employment entry programs. And so we have a not-for-profit partner in Rochester, the Mayo Clinic. And we've also partnered with Manpower to do placements at IBM, which increases skill set for the group of immigrants that we serve.
All right. Are there other questions? Yes, that's in the center.
More of a comment. This seems like pretty targeted, pretty good job training program, and sounds like you instill a lot of confidence in the people you work with, which is also a very good point.
Mm-hmm.
So, good to see they're getting off MFIP and becoming taxpayers instead of tax consumers.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm sorry, you know, I missed the first part of this presentation, so I apologize, but I always like to encourage folks like you to tell us what the cost benefit is of, and maybe you did already, by having folks being able to get off of the MFIP and be able to become taxpayers. Did you mention what that was already? And did I miss that?
As far as dollars are concerned, I haven't analyzed the exact dollar amount of savings, but as far as placements are concerned, we placed 48 people in employment in 7 months after training 87 of them, looking at skill sets and education as far as skills development for job readiness to English, but we were able to do tax terminations on 12 of the 48 that we served in 7 months, which means those 12 are no longer receiving MFIP tax.
Okay. I just think maybe another time you could provide us with that information, because it probably more than makes up for what the appropriation, and I'm sure many times makes up for what the appropriation would be.
Thank you. Madam Chair, if I might.
Yes, Madam
Chair. I think the program's been going on 7 months. It didn't even fulfill it. We haven't even fulfilled the first year. So I think at the end of that first year, it would be wonderful to ask for and expect, you know, an accounting of what's happened. I think they have that information, but they haven't reached the end of their cycle. So thank you for that.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You said you got 48 people's jobs with $50,000 so far in 7 months. To me, if my math is correct, that's just a little over $1,000 a job. I don't know of any program that can do that.
If you've never worked with IMAA, they are a wonderful group of folks over there, let me tell you.
I'm impressed.
Any other questions? And any other testifiers? No? All right. Then Representative Norton will renew her motion that House File 3151 be recommended to pass and be held over for possible inclusion in the Higher Ed and Workforce Development Policy and Finance Division Omnibus Bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Norton. We also have Representative Norton up for House File 3150. Representative Norton will move that House File 3150 be recommended to pass and be held over for possible inclusion in the division's omnibus bill. You may go ahead and begin presenting the bill, Representative Norton.
One moment, please. Madam Speaker, thank you very much for hearing House File 3150. The second bill I'm bringing forward today relates to small business development centers. Between 1999 and 2002, during our state's last economic slowdown, our state's smallest employers saw the largest employment growth. Employers with fewer than 1,000 employees added 68,709 jobs, while employers with more than 100 employees lost 51,866 jobs. Strategic investments in business support programs will enable them to weather an economic downturn and continue to grow. This bill is designed to strengthen and expand our existing small business development centers throughout the state. The SBDCs, as they're called, provide consulting services and offer workshops to assist local small businesses and entrepreneurs in order to aid their growth. Currently, there are 9 SBDCs throughout the state. Each location has 2 staff who provide one-on-one counseling and consulting for small businesses and entrepreneurs. The SBDC also provides resources to hire consultants to work with individuals who need specialized training or assistance, such as marketing, specific computer skills, etc. And each client receives up to 20 hours of free counseling from either SBDC staff or counselors. Currently, the SBDCs are required to privately match state and federal resources, which means one staff person is writing funding requests from each county or small town in their service area to maintain their match. The staff are wasting precious time that could be used in supporting small businesses doing fundraising. The appropriation in this bill provides the full match for the federal dollars, which enables existing staff to devote all of their time to assisting small business owners and entrepreneurs, something we know is vitally important in this at this time, particularly in the area of bio-business. The language also requires individual SBDCs to go through a strategic planning process to identify areas of strength and focus and share their strategic focus with their partners. This will allow other service providers to better serve the clients that SBDC is unable to serve. And finally, the language requires in the bill that SBDCs to obtain technical accreditation within 12 months. The technical accreditation requires that some staff be trained to assist high-tech companies, and the SBDCs must be able to provide or access the following competencies: technology transfer and commercialization, research and development funding, with the federal FEIR and FPPR, and intellectual property issues, technology networking and resource identification, and alternative financing. The technology accreditation is especially critical in Minnesota as we are working to strengthen our economy. Jobs in high-tech fields typically pay $26,000 more than the national average. If our state is going to invest in these fields, it is critical that our small business support network is able to facilitate this type of job growth. This bill provides $577,000 base appropriation added to the SBDC's existing base. I do have Mike Ryan, I believe, from the St. Paul area, the regional director of the Metro Small Business Development Center, who will offer testimony.
Thank you. If you would just state your name for the record, please.
Sure. My name is Mike Ryan.
Then you may go ahead.
And I'm filling in for a colleague from Rochester, so I was notified about 2 hours ago, so I don't have a prepared statement. But I'm the regional director for the SBDC here in the Twin Cities, located at the University of St. Thomas.
Thank you.
I did read the bill.
Are there questions for Representative Norton or the testifier? Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I hate to fill her up too much today, but Representative Reinert and I went to a meeting in Mankato where we found out that 95.1% of the businesses in Minnesota are small businesses and microenterprises, and I think the SBDCs do a wonderful job with this group of people, and I think it's a good program. Now you really owe me.
All right, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is a question for the. I've got a series of questions here, if I could. And for the testifier, do you get funding other than state funding for the SBDCs?
Yes, we do. We get a combination of funding from the SBA, the federal. We get some state funding from BEAD, and also St. Thomas throws in a cash match.
Madam Chair,
yes,
do you have to match? Is this a match funding, or
there is a match formula that we're given from our state director? And I would have to defer to Mike, I think, a little bit on the mechanics of that. But generally speaking, the host institution, in our case, the University of St. Thomas, does a dollar for dollar match for the grant funding.
Representative Mahoney.
Representative Norton, do you know how the rural SBDCs do their match?
Thank you for asking that question, in Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Norton.
Thank you. One of the reasons this is being brought forward is because part of the feedback that we get from rural is that they are spending their time literally writing grants for $100, $200, trying to get up to a match, and that's exactly why this is being brought forward. We would much rather see those people using their time in a constructive manner, being able to work with the small businesses and entrepreneurs, providing that technical assistance that they so desperately need, rather than nickel and diming the very few businesses they have in their area for these $100 checks.
Representative Mahoney.
I'm going to give you a couple more softballs here. I didn't read the bill recently, How many are there in the rural areas? How many SB?
There are 9 in the state.
Thank you, Representative Norton. Representative Mahoney.
Eight in greater Minnesota.
In greater Minnesota? Thank you. So would this 577,000, that would kind of take care of their match that they have to come up with, or does it do the whole thing, or more of it?
Representative Norton?
I think the idea is that, Chair, Representative Mahoney, I'm sorry. The idea is that it would free up that extra staff so that they wouldn't be spending their time fundraising. I don't think that means they can't continue to work on MATS in their community. In fact, it would enhance their program if they so chose, but it would allow the extra manpower to work. Staff time to work with the businesses in the community.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you just give us a hypothetical, maybe a description of a business that might come to you, and what they would come to you and receive, and how the process works if they're a small business.
Sure, we cover the Twin Cities, the 7-county metro area. It's typically a typical way. Maybe a bank has an outstanding loan with a small business, and the business may be having some trouble with their finance and accounting, their marketing. They need to grow sales, or they need to have some other operational issue. The bank will ask them to contact us. We'll bring them in, have a short interview and assessment to make our best estimate as to what their issues are. And then, based on what their needs are, we have a staff at St. Thomas of about 12 who will help them in their accounting or their marketing, or we'll kind of work with them through their issues and make sure they're on solid ground. And hopefully, what we really like to do is not to fix the business, but grow the business. Our real goal is to create economic impact, and that is grow small businesses that hire people that pay taxes. But often they come to us because they are in trouble.
Madam Chair, then, you know, the anecdotal complaint that kind of comes around is, what if they've got 3 competitors that are doing just fine? And all of a sudden government is reaching out and providing all kinds of help to one, and the others are doing it on their own. I think that's one of the perennial complaints or concerns that I hear from businesses when we do these kinds of programs. And I'm curious, how do you respond to that?
Mr. Ryan.
Well, I've been at St. Thomas almost 7 years. I have not heard that myself. We're open to all businesses. We're willing to assist all businesses. And we also are careful to draw the line at what we can do. And we're clear with our clients. We cannot act as an employee. We can advise them. We can act as a board member to kind of assess their situation. But we don't go in and do the heavy lifting for the client. They have to do the work. We're there to give them guidance and the benefit of our experience.
One last question. What would be the circumstances that would lead you to give advice to just close up?
Ryan.
To close up, you mean to shut down the business? Well, there are situations where they are. I guess where we come to that is when a business, in our opinion, if the market is not there, the margins aren't there, and we're getting to the point where instead of just the business is losing money, that the owner is actually taking personal assets, retirement, their house. At some point, you need to give the advice that maybe this isn't the best business to be in.
Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, from your standpoint of going off with what Representative Clark was talking about, the cost benefit thing, how many businesses that you've been involved with have after 3 or 4 years succeeded versus how many have actually failed after they have received help from you?
Mr. Ryan, are you prepared for that answer?
I'm not prepared to answer that. I don't know. I should say,
because most of the clients we take in are in business already, the survival is pretty good. We don't deal with the pure startups, which the survival is less than that. So, but I don't have the data, at least off hand, to know about the business survival.
Thank you. Other questions? And do you have other testifiers, Representative Norton?
I don't believe I have any. Someone from the audience was interested.
All right. Then if not, Representative Norton will renew her motion that House File 3150 be recommended to pass and be held over for possible inclusion in the division's omnibus bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. The motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We next have on the agenda House File 3050, which is Representative Olin. Representative Hawes will recommend that this bill be passed and also be held over for possible inclusion. Thank you. Representative Olin.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This bill is basically about micro loans to small businesses in greater Minnesota. Businesses that have access to capital are able to streamline processes in order to maintain their existing job base or to expand their production to hire more employees. Between 1999 and 2002, during our state's last economic slowdown, our state's smallest employers saw the largest employment growth. Employers with fewer than 100 employees added 68,709 jobs, while employers with more than 100 employees lost 51,866 jobs. Strategic investments in business support programs will enable them to weather an economic downturn and continue to grow. This bill basically has two parts. The first portion provides resources to existing micro lenders throughout greater Minnesota. The bill provides $200,000 for each district throughout the state that can be used to hire additional staff to provide technical assistance, supplement their loan loss reserve, and or to supplement loan funds. The most critical need I have heard from our existing loan providers is that of technical assistance. Two-thirds of greater Minnesota is covered by existing U.S. Small Business Administration microloan programs. SBA loans and some traditional bank loans require technical assistance before a company can be considered loan-ready. The $200,000 can be used to hire additional staff who will then be able to work with small businesses and entrepreneurs to leverage additional loan resources by ensuring companies, entrepreneurs are loan ready. The second portion of the bill provides $1 million to each Minnesota Initiative Foundation to expand existing small business revolving loan fund programs with a focus on entrepreneurs and new business. The Initiative Foundations were created in 1986 by the McDyess Foundation to focus philanthropic dollars in greater Minnesota. All initiative foundations have micro lending programs as one component of their economic development initiatives to supplement, not compete with, existing private and state loan providers. Initiative foundations provide small loans to companies to which banks will not lend and provide gap financing when bank loans will not cover the cost of the entire loan. The state has provided one-time cash for these programs twice in the past. The initiative foundations will be expected to provide a strategic plan about how the resources will be used and what community need they are meeting, including the size of loans provided, types of businesses to be served, and length of loan. This will ensure accountability for the state funds. These additional loan resources will be especially important during a recession, when people who are unable to find a job may see more incentive to start their own business. Unfortunately, the individuals who could best utilize these resources to grow our economy were not able to be here to speak for themselves. But I have passed out letters of support for this initiative from Mary Matthews of the Northeast Entrepreneur Fund, Timothy Penny from the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation, Bernadette Berger of the Southwest Initiative Foundation, and Nancy Vickersall of the Northwest Minnesota Foundation. I also have passed out a letter which shows Initiative Foundation loan stories so that you can see exactly what type of results they've had in the past and what they have been doing. With that, I would urge support of this bill.
Thank you, Representative Olin. I believe Representative Eastland, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you. Thank you. I'm just curious, I mean, it sounds like these are two different things, but it sounds like there's some overlap here between the Small Business Development Centers and this. I mean, you're both working. How do they work together? Where is their duplication? And maybe somebody could tell us about that.
Representative Olin, were you here for the presentation earlier?
Presentation, and as I understand, there are 9 districts included there. Obviously, some of which are in the metro area based on the testimony. These are all Greater Minnesota foundations that exist on this. They're made to a certain degree.
Madam Chair, to this point?
Yes, Representative Mahoney.
Madam Chair and Representative Eastland, the correlation between the two is that the earlier bill deals with consulting and helping businesses find a way to build on their business plan to clean up problems in their business with consulting. This particular bill, the $200,000, I have to be a co-sponsor on the bill. This particular $200,000 is technical support, which gets these initiative funds are to use that $1 million plus whatever they have in their particular initiative funds as microloans. The $200,000 gets technical assistance so that they help these companies get ready for the loan versus a new business plan or a marketing plan or something else. That could be anything from helping them figure out their accounting better or figuring out how to do a small micro loan to get the bridge loan to a larger bank loan, a variety of other things, but they do 2 different things. There's not much overlap, and if there is, it's minuscule.
Yeah, I think basically what it amounts to, this handles loans. The other programs may lead up to handling loans, but they're not handling loans themselves.
Is that all Representative Eastland?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I understand that's basically what makes them each unique, but their target audience is small businesses. They have the same target audience. All small businesses, Texas, can access both of these programs. It would seem that there would be some correlation so that if businesses are getting help in reorganizing, that they needed money, or if a business came for a microloan and they it was found that they needed some help in getting their business, they may refer to the other. I mean, it would seem like there would be some way, rather than just be funding separate organizations that are overlapping in some, I'm sure in some respects, and I think more appropriately would be working together to get the best bang for the buck. I guess that's all I'm saying.
All right. And Representative Olin, you said you had no testifiers. You have the printed material.
I have no testifiers. I have all the printed material. There's 4 letters of support, and then there's an examples from each one of the initiative foundations as to what type of programs they've done.
All right. Thank you. Is there anyone that is in the audience that wanted to testify for or against the bill? Any other questions from anyone here?
Madam Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Representative Olin and I have worked on this. I've had staff on some of this. I've spent a big part of the summer around the state talking to some of these initiative funds, and we've spent time trying to figure out what they believe was the best way that they could help small businesses, and consistently and independently of each other, this was what came up from each and every one of them. Is that their microloan program is the best program out there for small businesses that are having a hard time raising capital, particularly smaller 1- and 2-person operations, which these initiatives are geared towards. This is a program, the $6 million plus the $1.2 million, is universally supported, acclaimed by these initiative funds that have had a strong record of success out in the rural greater Minnesota area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of emphasis should be placed on the fact that this is six initiative foundations that have a track record, that have already got all the background laid into place to provide this type of loans and are all ready to go right now if they had the money to do them.
All right, if there are no further questions, then Representative Hawes will renew his motion that House File 30450 be recommended to pass and be held over for possible inclusion in the division's omnibus bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. The motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Olin. Next, we will have Representative Mullery, which is House File 743. Representative Mahoney will move that House File 743 be recommended to pass and held over.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to get the bill into the shape we'd like, there's A08-1082 amendment, and on line 1.7, the word energy should be engineering.
Okay, so we have two amendments, actually, then. So everyone should have in their packet A08-1082 as the amendment, and Representative Mahoney is going to move
the 1082 amendment.
Thank you. All those in... Oh, Representative McFarland.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm just looking at line 1.19. Is that the correct wording? I wondered if the words and manual are supposed to still be in there.
Representative Mullery, do you see that?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so... Representative McFarland,
Madam Chair, it doesn't read real well.
I'm going to ask Ms. Novak to just review that. Is that line 1.19?
Madam Chair,
Representative Mullery.
The trade often refers to a particular group of occupations. And there would also be other manual occupations outside of those, plus the STEM.
Yes, Ms. Novak.
It may be clear if the and following trades was eliminated and a comma was put in wherever that appears. It's also on line 1.19 and 1.14.
Thank you. So Representative McFarland will move to change 1.14 and line 1.19 with a comma after the word trades, eliminating the word and. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
How about 1.5?
Okay, so also 1.6?
1.6.
That's 1.6.
They did it a little differently there, and actually that makes sense.
Well,
okay.
It works okay.
Let's take care of the 1.14 and 1.19 at this point. Representative McFarland moves that, and all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. All right, that motion prevails. Okay, so now we have another...
Hold on, yes.
Oh, okay. I think there was one more so correction to this, was there not? Line 1.7, okay. So then that would be to change line 1.7, the word energy, to the word engineering?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, so Representative Mahoney is moving to amend line 1.7, changing the word energy to engineering. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Okay, so that motion prevails. Now we have an amendment that's been amended, and it's in its form that you would like. And so, once again, Representative Mahoney will move this amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. All right. The bill has now been amended, hopefully to the satisfaction of everyone here as they've reviewed it, and hopefully to you too, Representative Mullery, and if you would go ahead then.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, this bill is one that was originally introduced about 10 years ago, and it has been funded in the past, and I'm bringing it back now for it hasn't been funded in the last few years. With me today are Amy Brennigan, the Director of the Office of the Economic Status of Women, Mary Dahlquist, Director of the Apprentice Opportunity Pilot Project, and Brad Leto from the AFL-CIO main office here in Minnesota. The point of this is to help women get into non-traditional trades and other occupations, including now we're adding the STEM. Many women are still not going into the science, technology, engineering, and math, and yet we need to also aid them in entering these occupations. And there are various parts to this. There's needed outreach, there's the training that's needed, and in some cases there's the job retention support even has to be handled, and sometimes even child care and transportation are needed. We have an awful lot of people that are on welfare type programs or in low occupation jobs who would greatly benefit from this. I know of, for instance, a African-American woman who was the first black electrician in Minnesota, woman electrician in Minnesota, who, and it's not disclosing anything because she's done it when she could come over here and testify. She couldn't today because it costs a lot of money to that she loses, but she came over and she had been in a very bad situation, heavily onto drugs. I believe her children had been taken away, and she got into a program like this, and she's now back making probably more than anybody in the room now. Very good occupation, and there's just huge numbers of success stories like this. I originally got the idea from the Women in the Trades movement, and then we've expanded it and expanded it. Ray Waldron, when he was both head of the building trades and later at the AFL office, testified on behalf of it. And
Representative Mullery, perhaps your testifiers also will be able to share some stories.
I was just going to go to them. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. If you just state your name for the record, please.
Certainly. My name is Amy Brennigan. I'm the Director of the Office on the Economic Status of Women here at the Legislature. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks, members, for the opportunity to testify today and share some information with you. We do have a handout from our office that's included in your packets today, which I will reference a little bit, and you can also take a look at for your own interest. And basically what I want to point out is that if you look at many of these non-traditional or STEM-related careers, the percentage of women is low, yet the projected vacancies are high. So this is also a workforce issue. So the bill is important not only because it addresses opportunities for women, but also because there's a growing need in many of these areas. One example, Deed notes that the highest area of projected net job growth between 2004 and 2014 is in the occupational area of network systems and data communications analysts. Yet, only one in four of these analysts are women, and women account for less than 20% of the students enrolled in computer
and information systems education programs at all education levels. So there are two parts of this bill, and I want to comment briefly on each part. The first part of the bill addresses outreach efforts to educate girls and women about these non-traditional and STEM careers. And studies do show that there's a correlation between early exposure to these occupations and both education and higher enrollment in higher education and eventual work in these career areas. Now, there's some excellent programs that we have going on that have great short-term results that show how girls who participate in different mentoring programs in the junior high and high school areas are more apt to enroll in those classes in high school and then again in college or even in short-term training programs that address these areas. One program is in the Minneapolis Public Schools. It's called the High Tech Girls Society. And some of their very short-term results are that girls who participate in this program are showing more interest in engineering programs. They are competing more in the super mileage car design contest. And they're at Washburn High School, there's a plane building competition, and there's an all-girls team that is currently building an airplane for this competition, which hasn't happened in the past. So the awareness and outreach is clearly important. The second part of the bill discusses assistance for women to enter careers in the trades and technical occupations through skilled training classes or initiatives. Within this section, there is emphasis on access to these initiatives by low-income women. And I'll note again that women are often pulled into the lowest-paying jobs, and in some cases, these occupational areas are showing loss of growth. For example, in the occupational area of secretaries and administrative assistants, 97% of those employed are female. And these occupations are expected to see low growth rates through 2014. In contrast, as noted on your handout, high-wage occupations with high vacancy projections, such as pipe fitting and construction trades, include an extremely small percentage of women as employees. An entry-level secretary or admin assistant will earn a median income of $27,430 per year, where a drywall installer will earn a median income of $35,970. So non-traditional training initiatives like this one just present women with the opportunity to jumpstart their income to work in these career fields. And perhaps more than the statistics, the stories speak louder. So with me is Mary Dahlquist from the Apprentice Opportunity Pilot Project, who can speak to some of the clients that she's worked with in these career areas.
Thank you. Ms. Dahlquist, if you'll just state your name for the record, then go ahead.
Mary Dahlquist, D-A-H-L-Q-U-I-S-T.
Thank you. Go ahead with your testimony.
Fred again mentioned, I'm currently the director of the Apprenticeship Opportunity Pilot Project. My goal is to help women, people of color, low-income adults, and youth access training opportunities through the apprenticeship system. Prior to that, I had a life at Women's Venture where I was working there, recruiting, training, and placing women in the construction industry. I'm very passionate, about delivering these resources to women because as a high school student in the 1970s, I had a 1966 Impala that I learned how to Bondo in my driveway. I love any opportunity in art to play the torch. Thank you. Play the torch or build steps for high school plays, but no one ever mentioned to me, you know, that what might be a better match for my resource and talents would be to find a non-traditional career. They also didn't mention to me that my earning potential in a non-traditional career might exceed what I was able to make as a liberal arts graduate in the Reagan recession years of the 80s. So during my 4 years of preparing women for this industry, the faces of the training group changed a lot, but the messages remained the same. Here's some things that they would tell me. I can't survive on $8 an hour. I can't afford winter coats for my kids. I don't have dental insurance. I'm bored and just crazy sitting in front of a computer terminal all day. I don't like working indoors. The transmission of my car just fell out and landed in your parking lot. What all these women had in common is the need to try something new. They need a chance to strap on a tool belt, roll up their sleeves, and learn how to miter a corner, route tile, hang sheetrock, or sweat a pipe. They also needed the chance to be able to have their math skills bolstered in order for them to pass the entrance test and to get into the licensed trades like pipe fitting and plumbing. Like Rosie the Riveter, they need the opportunity to test the waters of their commitment to this challenging industry. They need confidence and hands-on skills in order to convince
skeptical contractors, apprenticeship coordinators, fellow apprentices, and other journey-level workers, mostly men, of course, that think by the very virtue of their sex that they cannot possibly transition to this industry. Currently, women comprise about 3% of the construction industry. We're losing ground. High school guidance counselors don't do any better job right now of selling this as a career than they did in the 70s when I was there. Very few schools offer hands-on shop classes or even introduction to architecture or other fields which women might thrive in. The brave women who were there in the 70s and the 80s, they're exiting the job market now. They're retiring, and it's very, very hard to replace their numbers. I also want to tell you a story about a client of mine that came to me in the winter of 2005. Her name was Deb. She was recently divorced that winter. She had two small children. She was in danger of losing her house. She could not make the mortgage payment as a dental hygienist. We put her through a construction skills training program that winter. She was given some financial assistance to help her through those tough weeks. She was given boots and tools, and eventually hired that spring by a union painting contractor. She started at $17.33 an hour, I believe, with benefits. This April, she's going to complete her apprenticeship and graduate from Minnesota Finishing Trades. Her journey level wage will be over $29 an hour, with a benefit package that puts her at over $45 an hour. 2 weeks ago, I attended a Girl Power event at Dunwoody College. This was a very, very cold Saturday where 60 young girls from the Minneapolis YWCA had the chance to sweat pipes and use a jigsaw and be mentored by tradeswomen. They need these chances. They need a chance to try in a new career. They need to think about what are some different vocabulary about how they might shape their lives. One young girl that I was working with told me, "I was really afraid of that torch at first, but I'm not now. I think it's fun, and I think I could be a plumber, and I could go home and fix our sink." So I urge you to support this bill. It provides much-needed information, training, resource, and assistance to girls and women so they can seek to discover their passion and maximize their earning potential. Any questions?
Thank you. That's Mr. Lido. He just introduced himself.
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Named Brett Leto, Chief of Staff for Minnesota AFL-CIO. There's not a lot that I can add to the previous testimony, quite honestly, and I'm not going to try. We have supported this in the past and believe it's anything that we can get to get more people into trades and give them the knowledge and the encouragement to start with and certainly get into apprenticeship programs is going to make them very productive tax-paying members of society, which is exactly what this is doing and for. And I understand budgets are going to be tight, certainly, but for I know the little bit of money that's been provided in the past, it's been very effective. And so I would encourage you to take a serious look at this when you're putting your proposals together, and we do certainly support this. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. We first have Representative Rivina.
Madam Chair, good to see my old committee administrator in front of the committee. I don't think I could. I was just wondering, Mr. Leto, given the fact that the apprentice programs are run by like the IBW and carpenters and that, and I'm sure that knowing my good friend Representative Mahoney, he's probably pushing the plumbers and steam fitters to be training women in their apprenticeship program. So what are the building trades doing with their own apprenticeship programs to entice young women to join up?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina. I hesitate to always respond to my former employer here, but and I'm not sure I'd use the phrase entice women. The building trades are not doing that. but they haven't had programs in the past to try and do that. I think, you know, it's always good to have encouragement and actually financing from the legislature to help in that direction as well. I mean, I can't speak to percentages and that sort of thing. I just know that they have actually made proposals and speaking at high schools and that in the past. But, you know, it's kind of along with everything else they do with the apprenticeship programs, it's kind of a hit and miss as far as how often they get to a lot of educational institutions and things like that. And I think having a program that actually aims to do that is very helpful, I mean, to the trades as well as other educational institutions and the people that enter. So I know it's not a great answer to your question, and sorry about that. But.
I represent the Beef Fund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think was mentioned up here that there's current funding going. Is there some current funding going to this now that would be directed at this same as this bill is directing the money?
Representative Mulder.
Oh, Madam Chair, Representative Eastman. No, there isn't. In the last few years, actually, I can't remember how many years ago. When Kevin Goodnow was still here, and Representative Gunther was co-author with me on a program that funded this program, and I can't remember how many years it's been.
Okay, just a follow-up. So this program kind of has been funded in the past, and that we're kind of refunding something that exists. What is the appropriation number that you're kind of looking at here? It's kind of a blank, and we haven't talked about that. I'm curious.
Well,
Representative Mulley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Eastman. We'd like $500,000. If Representative Riccovina had a heart attack over that, if it only becomes a pilot program, we want to get this started. It had good results in most of the places that it was done before. I believe the only place that didn't have outstanding results was one of the places in Greater Minnesota, I think. And so we'd like to get it started again, at least as a pilot program, so that we can develop it further next year.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I applaud the whole idea that we need to, you know, figure out how to break down employment barriers that exist. I mean, I think that's important. But I think there's also some caution to take in an approach like this that moves in this direction. Not to get into a sexist argument here, that some jobs are more appropriate for males or females. That's not really the issue. But I think, you know, the marketplace does play a role, and you know, men and women alike are involved in all of society and see all of the opportunities in high school with counselors and all those things to see the opportunities that are out there. An illustration of something that I think is kind of a concern that I have, and I don't know if it even parallels that, but it has to do with in the higher ed system. If you go back 40, 50 years in the higher ed system, we were looking at a situation where there was probably 60% of the students on campus were male and 40% were female. And there was a concern about that, and there was a huge effort in society to try and make sure women understood their ability to go to a college and to really achieve the same kind of things and get the same kind of opportunities that men were able to receive. And today what we have is we have the opposite. We have about 60% of the population on a typical college is female, and about 40% is male. And there is no outcry today to get more males to go to college and to fund that. So, I mean, I think we're going down a kind of a road that's kind of interesting here, and I just think we need to think, I think, a little more broadly and think, as a society, there should be opportunities that we are all kind of equally encouraged to participate in, and be careful that we don't start to tip the balance and do things that I think can really put us in a direction that we maybe don't intend to go. So that's just a word and an observation that I'd like to make aware of.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Mulley.
I don't think we're in danger of tipping the balance on the number of women in the construction trades or machinists or anything right now. And as an example of what is needed, it's not in the issue of employment, but something else that's similar. If you have to have the encouragement And the thing I was shocked a few years ago is the fact that 80% of white men who have served in the armed first in the armed forces get their veterans benefits, and only 20% of women who have served in the armed forces. So the same with only 20% of African American or Native American. So and that's why we changed that. But it's an example of why you need somebody to go out and do the encouragement and actually contacting people, let them know about things which is needed here.
Representative Stevenson, if this is to this point, otherwise Representative Eastland is still asking questions, and Representative Bruce is also on the list. So.
Madam Chair, just to this point, I'd just like to find out where Representative Mulry got his numbers from, because any veteran who gets a successful DD-214 serves honorably, gets their veterans benefits. There's no 20-80. And if they're retiring, then they get their veterans benefits regardless of whether or not they're a male or female.
Okay.
Well, it's cool to get them.
Representative Mulry.
Chair, the figures came from the from Clark Dyrud, who is the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs, and that was the basis of a bill that I carried a couple of years ago. And there was the Legion, in fact, listed it, I believe, as their number one issue of the year that year. So the figures, I think, are pretty. Since the Legion believes them, the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs gave them to me, I would guess that they're probably accurate.
Since we don't have the commissioner here to be able to defend or refute the discussion, perhaps we'll move along. Go back to Representative Eastland.
Thank you. I don't need to belabor the issue, but I think what you do is you make my point, Representative Mulry. It's simply when there's an inequity, what we try to do is we try to correct it politically. I'm just saying there's a huge inequity right now with who's going to a colleges. And it happens to be tipped in so that there's more women, young women on campus than there are men. And we're not clamoring around here trying to make that equal again. So I guess that's the point. I think we just need to be careful that when we start trying to manipulate the way the system works, the marketplace has the ability to make some adjustments on its own. And as we move down this road, I applaud the idea that we need to make sure that we provide equal opportunity for everybody. But I think the question is, let's make sure that it's equal. And if we see deviations in the other direction, are we as concerned then as well? And that's just an observation, and I don't mean to make it a discussion point here. But
thank you. You probably would raise much discussion opportunities here, but we're probably going to need to move on. Representative Bruce.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mulry, I've had different bills for women's venture, and I'm just wondering how this is different from that. I realize that your bill is specific for non-traditional positions. However, Women's Venture works on most, any type of business for women. And I'm wondering if this is something you could work with them, or is it different than what they do?
Representative Mulry, or did you want Ms. Brannigan to answer that?
Sure, I can respond to that. I'm also a former employee of Women Venture, so I can say that trades-related training is part of what they do, but there are a number of other programs across the state as well that are interested in addressing this and that could leverage some public dollars to do more with what they're doing. I'm thinking of Women in the Trades in Duluth. I'm thinking of, there's another initiative that I can get you more information on that's in the Moorhead area, I believe. And then there are a number of other local training programs, such as Goodwill Easterfields, who has a construction training program that would love to give more attention to getting women into that training program.
Representative Bruce, do you have a follow-up?
Well, Mary, I guess my question really was, is this the same type of thing, or is there something that you could work with them? I mean, in case we don't have enough dollars to fund, it looks like, we'll see what happens when we get the forecast. So I'm just wondering if there's something you can work in conjunction with them so we don't have all these separate little programs and just could put those together. That was my real question.
Of course.
And Ms. Brannigan.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, of course, and they're a strong leader in this area. Of course, we would work with them, and I think they would actually be interested in benefiting from an allocation of this as well. So.
Thank you. Representative Portman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know you wanted to move on, but I just did want to briefly give Representative Eastland a little backup, actually. I agree with the point, and I thought it was very delicately and well made. And my first reaction when I started hearing this bill was, we don't need any help. We can figure this. So just so you know that you're not alone in your thoughts. And I just think we do have to be careful about, there's going to be imbalances, and maybe we're getting to a point that we can be a little bit post-racial division, post-gender division, and start not having to do special things for different groups. But not commenting on this bill one way or the other, I just wanted to let you know that you had a little backup in that point of view.
I'm going to have to comment myself, because as a counselor who's worked with students, let me just say something about counseling. We need more counselors in the high schools as well as the college system to help young people determine what their goals are. And I think a couple of people mentioned about how counselors maybe have been deficient in their role, and I don't think that that's the case. I think we have been deficient in funding the number of counselors in the school system. And also, I have worked with the Project Discover program, an equity program back in the 80s and early 90s, and I do see the significance and the effort that you do put into encouraging women and men to look at non-traditional fields for their gender. You will see we have more men who are going to be nurses today, and we should have more women who are looking to be electricians. So I think that we need to look at both of the genders and see what we can do. So that's my personal comment. So, all right, and next we have Representative Mahoney.
Well, I'll disagree with the Sparky comment, but you don't want to be an electrician, you want to be a pipe fitter or something. aside from all the comments here, I support this bill because there's a shortage in the trades. There's a huge shortage in the trade, and it's only going to get worse. Many of the trade people are my age or close in and around my age, which means that within the next 10 years, I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but it's a huge number of the skilled trades that will be retiring. You know, frankly, the trades don't care whether you're 4 feet tall or 7 feet tall or man, woman, whatever. We just need people to be in the trades, and if we can get more women in the trades, you know, they do as good a job as most men, and you know, and there's no reason we shouldn't try to encourage them. And they're a good asset to the skilled trades, and I think this is a good idea.
Thank you. Do we have other questions and or comments? Otherwise, did you have other testifiers?
No, Madam Chair.
This is everyone? Okay, so we will have Representative Mahoney renew his motion that House File 743, as amended, be recommended to pass and be held over for possible inclusion in the division's omnibus bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Motion prevails. All right. Next, we have Representative Gunther. Representative Gunther will move House File 3299 and ask that it be recommended to pass and for possible inclusion in the Higher Ed and Workforce Development Policy and Finance Division Omnibus Bill. Representative Gunther, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. House File 3299 is the SEED program. It's the governor's program. It's a comprehensive set of programs to help individual businesses and communities create wealth and achieve prosperity. It is a targeted primarily to greater Minnesota, though there are parts which would work in the entire state. SEED employs three strategies to achieve its goals. Developing and growing entrepreneurs to help people develop ideas to become strong business leaders. New capital for rural Minnesota business to help growing businesses and to encourage investment in greater Minnesota. Help rural Minnesota gain a competitive advantage by building its community infrastructure and marketing its assets. And it is a much more comprehensive program than that. That's why we have the commissioner next to me. So with that, we would like to have him testify.
Thank you, Commissioner. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Dan McElroy. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Let me provide a little history as to how this set of initiatives came about. And there, very honestly, came as about as a request from Representative Rocavina during last year's legislative session that we get out and listen to people and to our constituencies. And we spent about 8 weeks in July, August, and September conducting listening sessions. And I want to thank many of you who were able to attend those around the state. Thank you. We set out 6,000 invitations, got 900 people to join us from traditional workforce development, economic development, K-12 education, higher education. And many of the ideas in the SEED initiative came from them on a bipartisan basis. Some add funds to things we've already been doing. One brings back a program that we hadn't done in 25 years that we believe to be a great idea. Let me go through the bill section by section. But as Representative Gunther indicated, there's three principal strategies. One is to help entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial small businesses grow and add jobs. The second is to provide greater access to capital for businesses, principally in greater Minnesota, but also on a statewide basis. And third, the resources for communities to assist entrepreneurs and create opportunities for prosperity. The bill is organized in one article in 26 sections. Some of the programs are in two sections, one that authorizes or creates the policy framework and one that provides the funding. So I'm going to go through it as the bill is written, and then I'll look forward to taking your questions. So I'll just go through it relatively quickly. Section 1 of the bill defines a targeted rural opportunity community. Some of the programs that I'll describe have different provisions in counties that have had population growth and low unemployment, and identify currently about 64 counties that have had long-term population decline or high unemployment. Section 2 creates a rural enterprise microloan program. We would work with partners around the state to create programs with loans in the, we think, in the range of $10,000 to $100,000. It's modeled on the Urban Initiative Loan Program that we've operated in the metropolitan area since 1993. Section 3 provides resources for the Small Business Innovation Research Program. Representative Mahoney's been very active and very strong advocate for this program. It helps Minnesota companies apply for research assistance from a variety of federal agencies. We currently have one person statewide who works in this, and we could do a lot more for a lot more businesses with more resources. We would also try to provide a connection to this program to our Small Business Development Center. Section 4 acknowledges that we've done some reorganization, after consultation with a number of you, but particularly Representative Mahoney, to organize an Office of Entrepreneurship and Small Business Development so that our people are organized along the lines where we believe the opportunities are in the future. Section 5 amends the statute to fold the former Office of Small Business Assistance into the Office of Entrepreneurship and Small Business Development, and streamlines our management and coordinates how we work with small business. Section 6 provides matching grants up to $25,000 for entrepreneurs to access resources at qualified research and education institutions. This idea came to us from Mike Lalich, the director of the Natural Resources Research Institute in Coleraine. Apparently it was done during the Perpich administration. It was discontinued in 1981 in a budget challenge. They were able to get, NRI was able to get money from the Knight Family Foundation, but not enough to do it on a statewide basis. We're proposing to make the services of NRRI, AURI, the Centers of Excellence, the Zeminski Institutions, and other accredited educational institutions available on a matching scholarship business or basis, businesses that need help in creating perhaps a patent model or proof of concept or product development work. Section 7 of the bill is the Main Street Minnesota Revitalization Grant. Some of you remember a report that Minnesota 2020 initiative started by former Representative Matt McKenzie issued last summer and asked us to think about the downtowns of very small communities around the state that have in many cases changed dramatically and in some cases clearly declined. They have declined in many cases because of changing shopping patterns or changing patterns of medical reimbursement or even things as small as the pattern of automobile dealerships to require larger minimum sales volume so that the small-town automobile dealer is becoming kind of an endangered species. But Main Street Revitalization Grants are intended to address that issue. They would only be available in the targeted opportunity counties. They would be available to pay up to 50% of the cost of projects engaged or aimed at revitalizing downtown areas or commercial neighborhoods in small communities. Section 9 and 10 have to do with rural innovation workforce grants. We would partner with the workforce service areas around the state to make money available to encourage entrepreneurship. Many times we will have people dislocated from a job who come into a workforce center and say, I don't want to just get a job, I want to start a business. We haven't had a lot of resources to help them. They need to have some assessment of their aptitude to run a small business, not for our benefit, but for theirs. Referrals in some cases, intuition for how to start a small business class, and then further assistance from our SBDCs. To some extent, this is, I have to apologize, I just described the wrong program. 9 and 10 has to do with JobSkills Partnership Extension for our workforce development centers in greater Minnesota. JobSkills Partnership programs have been around for 25 years, just had their 25th anniversary. They have worked best with large employers. This provision would help our workforce centers do JobSkills Partnership programs with smaller employers, particularly in greater Minnesota. Section 12 creates the Entrepreneurs Network on the theory that entrepreneurs like helping other entrepreneurs. It's been kind of roughly described as junior achievement for big people. A number of states have entrepreneurs networks. Wisconsin, Kansas, North Carolina have them that have been quite successful. We need a relatively small amount of money to get this network active across the state. Section 13 provides additional funds for the Office of Technology and Commercialization. This is the SBIR initiative. Section 14 provides additional funds for manufacturing extension grants. The legislature funded this program only for Minnesota Technology, Inc. last year. It's off to a great start. We'd like to be able to extend this to entities like the Natural Resources Research Institute, the AURI, and the Centers of Excellence. Section 15 would provide the Minnesota Trade Office export services in greater Minnesota. Currently, the Trade Office provides training for manufacturers to export their products, but does it only in the metro area. We know there's a demand in greater Minnesota. We'd like to fill that demand. Section 16 appropriates funds for the microloan program created in Section 2. Section 17 awards funds to each of the six initiative foundations originally established by the McKnight Foundation, similar to the proposal in Representative Olensville. Section 18 appropriates funds for the Small Business Product Development Program created in Section 6. Section 19 is a one-time appropriation to deed to strengthen the Minnesota Investment Fund. This is a loan program that has worked with communities all over the state for a long time. We do not have base funding for the Minnesota Investment Fund. It has been used in manufacturing, in biodiesel, and a variety of other funds, always with partners, either city economic developers, county economic developers, or regional development corporations. Section 20 appropriates funds to the JobSkills Partnership for the Rural Innovation Workforce Program created in Section 10. Section 21 appropriates funds for the Community Leadership and Planning Grant for cities or communities in targeted economic opportunity counties. Section 22 is a new idea. There are 13 states that do it currently, and it very honestly came from an example at a listening session where a small community had to borrow money for curb and gutter and street lights and some other downtown initiatives, and found that because they hadn't borrowed money in the past, the cost was very high. They had to pay for a bond rating, they had to pay placement costs, and it was almost prohibitive. In doing some research, we found out that 12 states currently pool the bond needs of small communities and do a multi-city bond pool two or three times a year at much lower cost. Standard & Poor's did a research project on this idea, the state bond pool idea, and we have that posted on our website, or we can provide copies to those of you who are interested. It would lower costs of borrowing and increase the credit quality for small communities. We're asking for a $100,000 one-time appropriation, but I believe the money is actually carried in the bonding bill, and it was part of the PFA bonding request rather than being carried in this committee. Section 23 appropriates funds for the Main Street Revitalization Grant Program that I mentioned. Section 24 requests funds to use to revamp our MinPro, Rural Minnesota Marketing site. It's a 15-year-old website, and it needs some upgrading. Section 25 is some additional funds for our Positively Minnesota marketing partnership with communities in greater Minnesota. And Section 26 is some additional funds for the labor market information research that we do to assist local communities, workforce investment boards, employers, educational institutions match career information with job market information. Those are the 22 initiatives that support the three strategies of strategic entrepreneurial economic development. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would be happy to take questions, or perhaps Brooks and Gunther has some other comments.
Let's come back to you. Want to wrap it up? Or
I would certainly be open to questions, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering where we would find the money to fund the program.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Portman, that's an excellent question, and we'll know better when the governor has committed to fund this in his supplemental budget. I can't tell you because I have not worked as closely with the Department of Finance as I used to, but you'll recall even in 2003 when we had a $4.6 billion deficit, we had a few dollars for very important, very high priority initiatives. And unlike the federal government that can print money when they want to stimulate the economy, we have to find it. And Commissioner Hansen will be announcing the forecast update tomorrow afternoon. And then I'm hoping, and I can't speak for him to an exact date, but early next week we'll have a supplemental budget recommendation that will make some recommendations as to where funds could come from.
Representative Norris.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to add a comment that I really liked the program that the governor put together. I think it's the right program at the right time, and hopefully we can figure out where the money is going to come from so that we can, I think this would really stimulate our, particularly the area that I represent in rural Minnesota. I think we really need this. So.
Commissioner, Representative Mahoney.
Commissioner,
or me? No, you. I think I flipped all you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've been to some of your listening sessions. I've been to some of your explanations sessions. I've looked over this program, and many of these are the ones that we gutted back in 2002, 2003. When we had the $4 billion shortfall. Now, so we just decided to kind of guff them up and bring them back.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Representative McConey, I can't. The Minnesota Investment Fund has never been in the base. It's always been a year-by-year approach. I can't think of any others that we cut in 03, but there may be some. Did you have any specific ones in mind?
I don't really have a specific one in mind. But these are all very similar programs to what we did have and then cut. Not all of them, but many of them.
Some of them
the
are.
The Commercialization Grant obviously is not one, but...
Yeah, the ones that are newest are the small business product development that's a returning 25-year-old idea that Mike Lalich brought back to us. The bond pool comes from other states. The Entrepreneurs Network comes from other states, but we think it's a good idea. The Manufacturing Extension Grant is an idea that basically was a legislative idea, but was aimed at a single vendor, and that we think that there's more capacity across the state to do that. Main Street Minnesota grants are new in their form, and the idea came from the 2020 project. We've tried to listen all across the state on a bipartisan basis, and ideas that are refunding things we've already done. We do a little with SBIR, but not enough, and we've never done it. It wasn't that we cut it. We just never had a lot of resources for it. Small Business Development Centers is an increase, but they weren't cut to the best of my knowledge. I don't recall that they were cut. We're certainly not bashful about saying something works and we're going to do more, or something's done well in another state and we're going to adopt it in Minnesota.
Go ahead. Commissioner and members, I don't know. I mean, just looking at this proposal, I'm glad, you know, I'm not going to be antagonistic and start waving my pen like somebody else did, but, you know, I can just say, looking at Section 17, if I recall, the initial program was maybe Mr. Berg or Ms. Novak can call me, but I think we gave, was it a couple million bucks to each one of the initiative, Northeast Initiative Fund, Southwest, and then they matched it. I mean, we could be looking here at a request of in the tens of millions of dollars. And
Mr. You know, Chairman, our recommendation for the initiative funds is $3 million, which would be $500,000 per fund.
So, Commissioner, do you have, instead of these blank numbers, do you actually have something in your head that...
Yes, and we provided a budget in this booklet that we gave you. Now, those may change a little with the budget forecast tomorrow, but that's what we have been using in our previews around the state or review sessions around the state is what's in the book that Mr. Gelman just gave you.
So,
and it totals $20 million from the general fund, Mr. Chairman.
Given what might happen tomorrow, is could any of these programs happen with the reallocation of funds within the agency?
The bond pool we would fund with charging fees, and I think it would still work, although it would be harder for small communities. We do SBIR now, but not. We don't have a lot of capacity. We would continue to do it. Most of the new things, we do not have funds to reallocate, to the best of my knowledge. We'll continue to look at that.
Mr. Chairman and members, in the 90s, the thing that made our economy grow to even having a $4.2 billion surplus was we created jobs. All through this bill, we're trying to create jobs or trying to give catalysts to create jobs. Certainly, we have a long ways to go to match the job growth of the 90s. But if we don't start something now, it is the number one concern of our constituents in the state of Minnesota, is to get better paying and more jobs for our constituents in the state of Minnesota. If we have more than full employment, employers are going to bid for jobs and pay higher salaries. So the thing that this bill does is it creates or helps create an environment so we can achieve those goals. And I think when you look at it, I don't think there's one thing, including transportation infrastructure, that matches what people want to have done more than this bill.
Mr. Representative Gunther, in the 1990s, we had a moderate Republican governor who, off the top of my head, I can think of, raised a couple of taxes, including the sales tax, including a health access tax, a governor, a moderate Republican in the... kind of in the mode that we used to have with Elmer Anderson and Harold Sasson and Arne Carlson. But we don't have a governor like that anymore. We have a governor that says he's not raising taxes. So the only place you can find this money is to find it within our internal budget, because you, your boss, Commissioner McElroy, is not going to raise taxes. So, you know, it's somewhat, you know, I don't know. I know what word I'd use, but I guess I can't use it on the tape. But it's absurd to be sitting here with a $20 million proposal when we're looking at a, probably, I've heard from some of your members, what could be a $1.2 billion deficit projection tomorrow, with tails that are even higher out there in the future. And we have Governor Puente, who is not going to raise taxes. So what do we do here? What program do we cut? Do I... And my mother's care in the nursing home is it's a great nursing home. They're trying to do best with what they can, but, you know, their funding is being cut on a federal and state level, hasn't kept up. And do we cut from programs like that to go off into a new venture? I mean, I remember when you were a guy that wanted to cut government. Now, Commissioner, you want to grow it.
Mr. Chairman, let me take respond to that in three ways. First of all, while Governor Puente is opposed to increasing tax rates, and I would remind you that the Democratic governors in Wisconsin and Illinois and Michigan and Iowa have also promised not to raise taxes, and the governor in Illinois didn't count gaming taxes in that, but none of our competitors have raised taxes, and one of our competitors has cut taxes fairly dramatically in North Dakota. But while we haven't raised rates, revenue increases about 5.5% a year, about 2.5 times the rate of inflation. Secondly, the challenge is there are times we need to reprioritize the set of resources. And in an all-funds budget of about $50 billion a biennium, we think that we know that we'll make a recommendation that we'll reprioritize all or some portion of this $20 million. Thirdly, you said I'm a guy who likes to cut government. No, I want to increase what we do kind of on the forward-facing side, the customer-facing side of government, and make the inner-facing process of government more efficient. And have government to work more on priorities. And so to have more programs in government that can assist business and communities and entrepreneurs add good-paying jobs, I support that a great deal. We'll make a budget recommendation that will do that within our means.
Well, we'll see what happens tomorrow and what we can do as the session moves forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mahoney, one last comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll just be quick because we're supposed to be out here at 2. But the Rural Entrepreneurial Workforce Centers, aren't we doing that at those small business development centers? And the entrepreneur, I've got about 3 of them here, and I'll just go through them all. You know, I was at the, I'd actually like an explanation of what the entrepreneurial network fellow's going to do, because I sat through one of his presentations and had some questions that he didn't seem to answer, and the comment from most of the people was, why would I want to drive to St. Paul for that? The other is the rural enterprise microloans. I mean, what are the initiative funds for? Why would we want to, actually it's a little strange coming out of my mouth, but why do we want government to do what these nonprofits are doing now?
Okay. Commissioner, maybe what you can do is set up a meeting with Representative Mahoney, because I have some very legitimate concerns.
Absolutely.
And I do too on all of these, but maybe we should talk with Representative Briner. I'm going to give you another question because we've got to get on to real. One last question.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll make this quick, but it kind of piggybacks on Representative Mahoney's concerns, but in a little different way. I'm wondering how much in your listening sessions you've coordinated what's actually going on the ground out in outstate Minnesota, because there are several initiatives in my region that mirror some of the things you're doing here, and I hope that we'll be partnering with those initiatives and enhancing what they're doing rather than setting up something alongside of.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brenner, I hope we're coordinating well. We have a close relationship, for example, with the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation and with the Workforce Investment Board, with the Regional Development Corporation, RDCs, and are trying to strengthen that. We funded, using federal workforce investment incentive money, some grants called Frameworks for Integrative Regional Strategies to get the strategies together so that we don't overlap. But we're doing our best to communicate with all those partners.
Representative Hartman, did you have a last final comment?
Well, Mr. Chair, of all the people in the legislature, I'm surprised that you don't recall the governor's cigarette tax is 15 times larger than the gas tax we passed on Monday.
Well, I never believed that he didn't raise taxes. I was just making a point to the commissioner. With that, then, meeting adjourned.